Well, how about this? Could Nick Saban be eyeing a comeback to coaching? Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We're all a little bit surprised by this. Pearl, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense and it doesn't make sense.
You want to flesh that out?
Well, he's just a piece of age. He turned 74 on Halloween. It'd be kind of unprecedented. But then again, Pete Carroll in the NFL. And listen, Tony La Russa took a job in his mid-70s. There have been college coaches who've gone to 80. Bobby, did Bowden go to 80?
Joe Paterno obviously is a little bit of a dark history now, but let's hear from Greg McElroy. This is where it's coming from. Nick Saban's former quarterback, one of them, on the Mac and Cube show in the morning, says someone in the know thinks Saban's going to coach again.
Very much in the know person that I have a lot of respect for and have spent a lot of time around and just really, really admire. They seem to think Nick Saban's not done coaching. I had a similar reaction, but he's pretty adamant that he thinks Nick Saban will be coaching again.
Okay, so again, that was Nick Saban, one of his former quarterbacks. Greg McElroy now works for ESPN. Let's bring in Brett McMurphy, who's covering SEC Media Days for On3, where he is a college football insider. Brett, thanks so much for the time. How you doing?
Hey, good to be with you guys again this morning.
Yeah, appreciate it so much because we know you're busy. What do you make of Greg McElroy saying someone in the know told him that Saban may not be done with coaching?
Yeah, sorry to throw a wet blanket on this, but yeah, I know Greg really well, and when I saw that come out, I walked up to him and I said, "Hey, you know, is this what you said?" And he said, "Well, I didn't say he's coming back. I said somebody that I know and respect thinks that he's coming back." And basically, Greg told me that he doesn't think Saban's coming back. He knows that he's completely fulfilled with what he's doing now. But this other person believes that he misses the competition, but Greg doesn't buy it. He says he's not coming back. I talked to other people that that know Nick really, really well, and I don't think he was too happy that that was out there because he's really an he's enjoying life away from football, and I think specifically he's glad that he's not having to deal with all the stuff going on with NIL and the way the college athletics is structured with no rules and all that mess. So, there's nothing going on, so it made for a great news day. But, I would say there's a 1%, less than a 1% chance that he coaches again. Unfortunately, I'd love to see him coach again. I mean, the greatest ever in college football, but I don't see it happen.
So now that we've had a little distance from his surprise retirement, is it the NIL and the transfer portal, like we kind of assume, just the current system, he just didn't enjoy it that much?
Well, I don't know necessarily if he didn't enjoy it, because it really hadn't. It's obviously that was a year ago, and just think of all the changes we've had in the past year. I think it was more, Lane Kiffin's told this story a number of times. After they won the national championship one of the years, he called a staff meeting at 7:30 the next morning. And he comes in at the staff meeting and he goes, "Hey guys, we're behind recruiting. We've been preparing for the playoffs. Everybody else is recruiting. We got to get out there recruiting right now." They're looking at each other like, "What the hell are you talking about? We just won the national championship." But that was his drive. And he admitted to me and to other people that basically he got to a point where he didn't know if he could continue that drive. And that's the only thing he's known. That's why he's been so successful. He told me a story a few years ago that kind of sums up his personality and where he got his drive, and where his mom, who was in his 80s, called him at practice one day and basically told an assistant, put my son on the damn phone right now. And they gave him the phone, and Nick said it's the only time he took a cell phone call during practice. And his mom says, "Brother," because they're all from West Virginia, call each other brother. She goes, "Brother, I got something to tell you." And he goes, "Are you okay? Is everything okay?" And she goes, "Yeah, brother, I got to tell you something." And he's like, "What?" And she goes, "I just made a hole in one, and you've never made a hole in one." And he's like, "What? You're calling me to tell me you made a hole in one?" And she goes, "Yeah, and you've never made one." And she hung up on him. So that's where he gets his competitive drive. And he just got to the point where he didn't know if he could do that, continue that But obviously, yeah, the current state of college athletics had something to do with it. But I think it was more just a realization that, you know, hey, I'm in my 70s. I don't think I can keep doing this at this rate going forward.
To be honest, do you think Nick Saban would give back one of his championships for a hole-in-one? Brett McMurphy's joining us.
Absolutely not. Yeah, he got two after that conversation.
Okay. He's a college football insider. I know people love their golf. They get addicted to the golf. We understand that, Brett. So we've been asking this morning, I want to get your thoughts on the SEC quarterbacks and all the football stuff, but quickly, we've been having a debate this morning about whether or not the SEC should be able to dictate the future of college football and the future of the college football playoff more specifically. Now, I understand that the Big Ten also has a say, but it feels like the SEC may have a bigger say. Is that a good thing for college football that the SEC can kind of decide the college football playoff in the future?
So, Maggie, I'll answer your question, but I guess I could argue both sides of this. For saying that, no, they should not have a say in it. College football, there's 10 conferences, there's 136 teams. Everybody should have kind of equal say, have the equal chance, all those obvious things. To say that they should have a bigger say, which they do, is, you know, there's four power conferences, but there are two power conferences that are head and shoulders above the ACC and the Big 12. And so that's why they have all the power, because they have the biggest resources, they have the biggest TV deals. And so they have basically been granted this power that the conference has signed an MOU that would allow the Big Ten and the SEC to dictate what the future of the college football playoff would look like. Is that fair? I guess it depends on if you're a fan of those two conferences or not. The bottom line is, if those two conferences wanted to just do a playoff with themselves and not allow any other schools in the playoff, it would be, you know, the most watched playoff potentially that we've ever had, because all the blue bloods would be in it. And any other playoff from the non-power to that they put together would almost kind of be like the NIT compared to the NCAA in college basketball. So I'm trying to answer your question. So it's kind of, I guess, where you stand on how you feel about these conferences, but make no mistake, they do have the most power, and so they're going to do. And again, I know people are I'm conflicted by this. If you're Greg Sankey, your number one goal is to do what's best for the SEC. What your university presidents want, that is your number one goal. Unfortunately, it's not to do what's best for all of college football. Even though your decisions may impact the Conference USA, the MAC, the Sun Belt, Big 12, whatever, you can think about that. But you can't change what's best for your conference. And so that's kind of where we get down this rabbit hole of whether what they should do and is it for the good of college football. And the same goes for every conference. Every conference is doing what's best for them. They're not worrying about the other conferences. The only difference is with the SEC and the Big Ten, when they make a decision that's what's best for them, it trickles down, starts the marble down the mountain, if you will, and starts the avalanche and impacts so many other conferences and schools.
All right, Brett, this is, I guess, a related question, because you can only ask this about the SEC. Which head coach has the most pressure to win a national title within the next 2 or 3 years?
Man, that's a really good question. Not Georgia. Wow, I'd say it's a three-way horse race between Kalen DeBoer, Brian Kelly, and Steve Sarkisian. Sark's, you know, come in at Texas. They've obviously been incredible. You know, Arch Manning, all the hype with that, all the hype with Texas. They'll probably be picked to win the SEC. They'll be obviously a top two or three preseason team. LSU, Brian Kelly, the last three coaches at LSU, Nick Saban, Les Miles, and Ed Ogeron, all won national titles. Ogeron and Miles won it in year three. Saban won it in year four. This is year four for Brian Kelly. And then Kalen DeBoer, obviously, following Saban. You know, anything less than a national championship is going to be a a disappointment. So I'd say it's those three. I don't necessarily think one has more pressure than the other. I don't think any are on the so-called hot seat by any means, but certainly I think those are the three. Now, if Kirby goes a few years and hasn't won another national title, I would add him to the list. But everybody else below that, you know, look, a national title would be great, but I don't think their fan base is. If you're at Florida or Ole Miss or Texas A&M, you're not saying, you know, we haven't won a national championship. It's kind of understood that they're kind of that next tier within the SEC.
Brett McMurphy is joining us. We're talking about SEC football. He's a college football insider for On3. Arch Manning, you mentioned him. Is there any way, Brett, that the production can match the hype this season for Arch?
Perfect question. I don't think so. I don't think so at all. I mean, I think Maggie, look, he's the favorite to win the Heisman. I don't think he'll win the Heisman. And look, it doesn't mean that he may not be the best player. I just think you look historically, the people that start or the guys that start the year as the so-called favorite to win the Heisman usually don't win it. And what I've noticed in the past few years is that, you know, Manning's first game, whatever he does, he can throw for 350 yards, three touchdowns, and one interception. Because he's the Heisman favorite, it seems like a lot of people will not look at the three touchdowns. They'll say, why did he throw the one interception? What happened on that? It's almost like it's like everything. You guys experience this. When you're on top, what happens? Everybody tries to knock you off, tries to tear you down. And so I think that's going to be the challenge with Manning. And so, look, he could still win it. You know, he's got a great opportunity to get a great start when they open up at Ohio State. But I think, yeah, I think Maggie, I think the expectations are just going to be too high. And then you've got Paul Feinbaum saying he's the best quarterback since Tim Tebow. I mean, give me a break. The guy, you know, Paul got in the sun too long during the summer. But I mean, if you want people to, you know, if you want to have some hot takes, there's none hotter than that. But, you know, that's not fair to the kid. I don't think it's realistic. Let's see what he did. And, you know, the great Steve Spurrier doing a podcast had a throwaway line that everybody, you know, it went viral where he said, well, if Arch Manning's so great, why didn't Sark play him more last year? He didn't play him. And the guy in front of him, you know, wasn't selected until the seventh round of the NFL draft. So there's a lot of believers and a lot of naysayers, but we'll certainly find out. But Maggie, I agree. I think he will not be able to live up to that expectations, and that's unfortunate, but kind of the way it is.
Brett, your On3 colleague Andy Staples, a good friend of ours, put out a list ranking the SEC quarterbacks. Who would you have as your number one quarterback in the conference?
Probably Nussmeier of LSU. I don't know who Andy had.
Yeah, Lagway.
Lagway. Look, the potential wise and draft wise, people love him. Andy could be correct. I'm just going with Nussmeier because I think he can have a better season because he has more pieces around him. Florida's schedule is crazy hard. It's how it was last year. You just flip the home and away. So they're going to play six or seven, you know, top 15 ranked teams. And Nussmeier, LSU was here yesterday. He talked about his wide receivers. He said, which is crazy, he said basically he doesn't think any of his wide receivers run slower than a 4.4. and he basically it's all speed. So basically he's just got to, you know, get it out there and they'll go get it. So I would say, yeah, I don't disagree with Lagway. I would go with Nussmeier just because of the experience also. Lagway came in kind of last year, kind of middle of last year after an injury to Mertz. But, you know, it's ironic who's the best quarterback. And, you know, we didn't mention Manning, and that's not a shot at Arch. It's just, you know, those other two guys have done it, have more, you know, more experience. So I would put those guys in. And look, Norris at South Carolina is unbelievable. There's a lot of good quarterbacks in this league, but, you know, that's why we play the games, I guess, to figure this stuff out.
Brett, last one for you. And again, thanks for doing this. We know it's a really busy time of year covering the SEC Media Days and all the big power conference media days. So Ohio State and Michigan are your last two national champions. how big of a gap do you think there is between the SEC and the Big Ten this year? You know, is it a big gap? Do you think they're pretty even? What's your thoughts there?
Well, it's funny because, you know, the SEC's won 14 of the last 19 national championships, I think. And, I mean, there were some years where the SEC won that, and they were not a very good league. But you know what? Alabama was really, really dominant, and they won the national championship. So no one remembers that. I think the SEC is a better league than the Big Ten this year, top to bottom. You look at the Big Ten, and you go about three or four deep as far as national title contenders. With the SEC, you could probably three or four deep, but then the next, probably down to the 12th best team. You've got teams that could win anywhere from 8 to 10 games if things break right. I don't think the Big Ten is as deep, but look, if the Big Ten wins another national championship, nobody's going to say, well, the Big Ten, you know, they weren't any good because Purdue was horrible. You know, it's like the Big Ten won another title. And yeah, not only has the Big Ten won the last two national championships, but the SEC has not been to the national championship the past 2 years. They haven't even got to the final game. So will that change this year? We'll have to see. But I would say, you know, the overall depth and strength of the SEC is better than the Big Ten, but that certainly does not mean the SEC is guaranteed to win a championship, much less even get to the national title game.
Brett, thanks again for doing this. We always love getting to pick your brain, so appreciate it, and enjoy the rest of the SEC media days.
Hey, you got it, guys. Thank you.
Appreciate that. You can listen to Brett McMurphy's podcast. Also, he's On Three College Football Insider. Does a great job.
Yeah, On Three is awesome.
Yep.
Our buddy Staples McMurphy. So he kind of poo-pooed the Saban's coming back.
I know. Bummer. We could dream.
Well, but, you know, that doesn't mean someone's not going to call his agent, Jimmy Sexton, and say, hey, well, you know, check in at least.
Well, if I were him, I'd keep this rumor alive, because then all of a sudden ESPN or any other TV network just backs up the Brinks truck to pay you a little bit more to keep you on TV. Let's play the game the right way here, coach.
Saban's 73. You know how much money he's made at Alabama? I don't think he has a problem with that. I also agree strongly that the funny thing is Arch, I think Arch is going to be really, really good, but I think Garrett Nussmeier is going to be just as good. Like, he's going to be... I think his answer was he's one of many good quarterbacks in the SEC. He's not transcendent.
Yeah, I mean, I think DJ Lagway, who, by the way, you want a hot quarterback take. Yeah. I was listening to our pal Andy Staples talk about how Lagway has more tools than Tim Tebow.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Tebow couldn't throw. So, well, right. That's actually not that great a
compliment. Well, when you say, I know, but when you say, when it's presented as DJ Lagway is a better quarterback than Tim Tebow, that gets people really upset.
But did he say better or more tools?
Well, then they had to parse it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I have more tools than Tim Tebow.
Oh, come on. Okay, so Lagway, you've got Garrett Nussmeier, you've got Arch Manning, and you've got Lenore Sellers are kind of
Also, too, like you go down to between 5 and 10 are these who's...
John Mateer, sure.
Yeah, well, Mateer is going to be big. Who the Ole Miss quarterback, Simmons, we were talking about.
Yeah, Austin
There's
Simmons.
A lot of guys who could come out of nowhere. So
Austin Simmons has, you guys might remember this, he had this like glorious drive where Jackson Dart... and Manny is hoping future Hall of Fame quarterback Jackson Dart for his Giants, but Jackson Dart got hurt and Austin Simmons comes in and it was seamless. Yeah. Leads Ole Miss down the field, score a touchdown. Yeah. And at that point it was like, maybe Dart just shouldn't come back in this game, but he did. Yeah. They end up beating Georgia. It was a huge steal.
Yeah, I mean, he's Lane Kiffin. Lane Kiffin produces incredible passing numbers. I mean, sorry, Manny, for your future Giants quarterback there, but that's a system. By the way, Austin Simmons, 16th in Heisman odds, and Marcel Reed at A&M, 17th at Heisman odds. I think that's a little dicier situation. A&M, who knows, right?
And then we obviously the fan favorite, everyone's favorite, Diego Pavia, who's now 24 years old, but basically sued to make sure that his junior college year did not count towards his eligibility. So he's now back at Vanderbilt, showed up to SEC Media Days wearing a tuxedo. Gunnar Stockton from Georgia, Pearl, Ty Simpson, Alabama. Got a lot of big names.
Yeah, it's funny. There's so much John Mateer hype, too, formerly of Washington State. But he could be great at Oklahoma. It is a deep conference. But the Arch is like transcendent as a media figure in a sense, but he's one of a group in the SEC, which is so funny to me.
You know, when Brett McMurphy was just talking there, and if you miss any of that interview, you can always catch the Maggie and Perloff podcast or just hit the rewind function on the Odyssey app because it's awesome. It's crystal clear. I kind of got a little sad for Arch, and I know nobody's crying for him because, you know, I'm sure life is pretty awesome for Arch Manning. But when he was saying that the expectations are so high for him, like if he throws for three touchdowns and 350 yards but throws one pick, everyone's just going to be looking at the one interception. By the way, that's not going to stop. Like, you think the hype is big for Arch now. Imagine if he decides to actually come back to college next year.
And then
goes to the NFL. Like, he's never going to outlive this. He's going to have to basically be the greatest quarterback of all time to somehow, like, live up to this, I guess?
Well, I don't disagree with you, but I do think Mannings are wired differently. Like, Eli never seemed to care one way or the other about his last name. I mean, I think, and Arch seems pretty chill. Like, I think that they kind of can handle this, right? I mean, Arch has been famous since he was a sophomore in high school.
Yeah, I guess with Eli, though...
Arch is coming out.
You know, we never had to, like... Eli did go to Ole Miss, so he was following there in the footsteps of his dad. So, yeah, that's a big shoulder, load to shoulder. But
Arch Manning.
He won pretty early in his NFL career.
Yeah.
You know, like, it kind of got the monkey off his back.
But he's so, you know, he's Eli. He just, like, doesn't... Like, fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, he's like, I'm just out here throwing the pigskin around. I don't know. They just seem oblivious to it.
Yeah.
Because they are Manning.
But I don't think Peyton Manning felt that way. I think Peyton felt all the pressure all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why. It doesn't seem
like that in the playoffs sometimes.
Feeling bad for Arch Manning just doesn't sound right. Because, you know, Arch Manning. He's got $20 million in the bank. He's super good looking at University of Texas at Austin. And he's going to be the number one overall pick. Like, why would you feel bad for that guy? He's the one guy in America you don't feel bad for.
I guess, I don't know. Because he's, even if he's good, if he's not amazing, it's going to feel like a disappointment.
I mean, I think you bring up the question, if you could switch places with any human being in America right now, would it be... Arch Manning? Or be, I don't know, like a number one recruit, like Cooper Flagg or like, or Wembanyama or Anthony Edwards. I don't know, like, who do you want to be? Like, Arch Manning's got to be high up on that list. He's like, he's got everything. He's way better looking than his uncle.
So he's got that going for
him? Remember that picture where all the Texas quarterbacks were shirtless? He's shredded.
Well, he's also just like a in-shape teenager. 888-710.
Eli and Peyton never were like that. No, Arch has got it all. I'm so surprised. You feel bad for Arch Manning.
No, I mean, it's going to be tough for him. He's in the shadow of his uncles, and in this era of football, I don't know. The shadow of his uncles and his grandfather is going to loom large.
His uncles won nothing in college, so he's got that too.
Doesn't matter. It's almost like they're comparing his uncle's NFL career now being superimposed onto Arch's college career. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. All right, appreciate Brett McMurphy there. We've got to take a quick break, but in just moments, coming up, we will give you some of Brian Kelly's hottest takes from yesterday. The LSU coach has a brand new approach to football and the Bayou. It's M&P.
I'm here with my family.
All right, the Defensive Player of the Week is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. So we've been going a lot of WNBA lately because there's not a ton of sports going on. I watched Caitlin versus Paige this weekend, and there was no defense played whatsoever. It was glorious. So it can't be that game. Maggie, got any choices here?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was like the dipstick kid from last night at the home run derby robbing Junior Caminero in the final round of a home run, but they awarded it to Caminero. We're also irrationally angry at this teenager. It looks like a teenager. I don't know why. It's got to be something WNBA. Who else is playing?
Well, baseball played this weekend. I mean,
I know, I'm trying to think of anyone who robbed any home runs or amazing. I mean, Cody Bellinger's been pretty amazing defensively lately.
Oh, wait. Didn't Kyle Tucker literally rob Cody Bellinger of a 4-home-run game?
Oh, yeah.
That didn't hit your guys' TL, huh?
No, it did.
No, it did hit mine.
Are you crazy? The Cubs are one of the best stories in the league.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm crazy.
I have no idea. EJ, who'd you pick?
So the defense player this week is Bobby Witt, who made a spectacular play on Saturday to rob a hit from one of my New York Metsies.
Out of the bullpen,
about how he thought it changed his arsenal. There's a great play from Bobby. In time for the out. Wow. Wow.
Bobby Witt Jr., one of my favorite players who's not a Met, went into the hole and Derek Jeter-like flew into the air and threw an absolute seam to first base, getting, I believe that was Brett Beatty, out at first. Bobby Witt Jr., an all-star, a superstar, and unfortunately hurt my Metsies there. So I'm giving Bobby Witt Jr. Defensive Player of the Week.
He's good at that baseball thing.
Yeah, he's really good.
God. I'm pulling it up, but I'm stuck behind an ad. I can't see it yet, but it looks awesome.
Well, take EJ's word for it.
He made this play look so easy.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't even, knew this was a single, and it was not even close.
We were asking this question yesterday. Did we ever come to a consensus?
Yeah.
After Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge, who's the next most famous player in baseball, or who's the third face of baseball? Bobby Witt Jr., if he played maybe in a bigger market, no disrespect, Kansas City, maybe if he played in a bigger market, he's bigger. There's all these Cubs now. Pete Crow Armstrong has become now a superstar.
Bobby Witt Jr., by the way, is in mid-left field by the time he makes this throw.
Crazy.
I do have it up. It's crazy.
Is there who's the third face of baseball? Is it still like Clayton Kershaw? Is it just someone who's been around?
I think it's a Mookie or Freeman conversation.
So another Dodger.
Wait, we're taking Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge as 1 and 2.
Yes.
Right. So I think it's, yeah. I think Mookie Betts is so likable. We forget about him a little bit. But I pulled up the jersey sales, and it goes Shohei, Aaron Judge, Freeman, Mookie. So, and that's this year. And people have had their jerseys. I think the Dodgers are so high profile that if there was a more popular Yankee, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how I would go.
What about the big dumper? I mean, he's hit 38 home runs. He's got, the platinum glove? I mean, the guy can rake, and he can play defense, and
you're
plays catcher.
You're kind of caught up in the moment, aren't you, though, in that one? Is he like the sustained third biggest star?
He's been trending that way.
He's rising.
Yeah, he's rising. Like, it's not a fluke. It's not a flash in the pan.
Is he bigger than Mookie Betts
in 2025?
Mookie's a World Series champ.
Yes.
I think the problem with Freddie and Mookie and Bryce Harper and in some ways Lindor, I think these guys are kind of old news. They're phenomenal players still, and they're stars. But I think you're always looking for the next thing now. I think once you get past the top two guys, you're looking for the next thing. So that's why I do look at like a Paul Skeens or a Witt or one of these guys and say, like, who are the guys that I want to turn on the TV and watch these guys play? And I'm not looking to watch Mookie Betts or Freddie Freeman, even though they're great players.
Seek them out.
I've seen enough from them. I've seen the best of what I could see from them. I want to see something new.
Well, I would argue that those guys are established, and therefore they're the third. Because you know them.
Right.
Kind of like, I think we were approaching it from a different angle. But, I mean, I'll tell you, the jersey sales are all more like known players. Like, the new guys are not on this list. Skeens flirts between, I saw, 15 and 20 in jersey sales. Hmm. Like, the old guys, people are buying jerseys of people they know because they saw them in the World Series last year.
I'm also wondering, are people more likely to buy a jersey of a player on a team they're not rooting for? Because baseball is still the type of sport
where
I think you are following your team more closely than anyone else. Like,
agreed.
If I'm a Mets fan, I think Paul Skeens is great, but I'm not buying his jersey because it's a National League team.
Yeah, I would never buy a jersey I do it in the NBA for, like, I do throwbacks all the time. I would never buy another jersey.
Yeah, it's different with the sports.
Team in baseball.
Yeah.
Never.
Especially current players. Maybe a few.
But then why is Shohei number one? Shohei's the most popular. He's the number one star in the sport, right?
Global,
I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, global impact.
But I think to Maggie's point, though, I think some of those bigger fan bases have an advantage. So if you play for the Dodgers, I think that, you're not going to, I mean, I know they have a lot of alternates now, but you're not going to have 7 Shohei jerseys. At a certain point, you're going to mix it up. And who else are you going to get? Okay, I'm going to get Betts, or I'm going to get a what's name. And if you're a Phillies fan, Bryce Harper is the guy, and the Phillies have a big fan base.
So what about, Tatis? He's big. He's high.
He's a star. I think he's a star.
And I think Bryce Harper, you guys don't like him, but I think he transcends Philly. Like, he's popular everywhere.
He was a high school phenom. He was on Cover Sports Illustrated when he was 16. Definitely.
Yeah. I don't think, and I'm looking at the list. They're not all big. Corbin Carroll is really high up there for some reason.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah.
I'm surprised by that.
But he's doing really well. And I just think that if I was to say the guy I want to watch is Ellie De La Cruz, how about him?
Again, I wouldn't buy the jersey, even though he's on my home run derby team and I love watching him, but I wouldn't buy his jersey because he's not on my team.
Right, but I'm saying, if you go by jersey, he does well.
Mm.
Yeah. I think he has to be, not that he's not a great player, he is, but I think he has to be a little better before I would put him number three. Like, Shohei and Aaron Judge are, like, they're two of the best players we've ever seen. I feel like that's a big drop to me to go to Ellie De La Cruz.
Yeah, but you guys, I'm surprised that I'm not getting more love on Mookie.
He's a great player.
It feels like I've been there, done that. I'm getting a vibe of that out of the room.
In some ways, he almost makes everything look too easy. Like, in theory, like, a guy going from short to center and center to short should be like, that should be a headline story we're talking about every day. But honestly, he makes it look so easy and smooth. We're just like, oh, of course he can play shortstop as playing center field.
Somewhere, Rafael Devers fan base is a single tear going down there.
Devers is, by the way, super high because he got the bump.
Oh, going to a new team.
He's the highest selling this month.
Yeah.
I was surprised no one Soto guys. If he wins a World Series, and he's a potential third star.
Yeah, I mean, for the Mets fans, for sure, but he's kind of been a mercenary the last couple of years. So if you're a Padre fan, you know he's only there for a short amount of time. And then the Yankees thought he was only there. Well, the Yankees probably thought he was going to be there forever, but
yeah, whatever.
Turns out it was just a year. So you got to wait for him to settle. Now he just signed with the Mets for 10 years. So he's good.
I mean, well, Ohtani switched teams, and he's still the man.
Right, he's settled now. Now you're going to buy it. Juan Soto's been
crossing
the United States for the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think Ohtani was one when he was the Angels, too. Like, it's, I mean, I think there are certain stars. Yeah, what are we settling on? Who you guys are going, Skeens is the number?
I think it's probably Skeens.
Mm-hmm.
Me three.
And I think also the social media aspect, too, with Livy Dunn makes him cross over in a way that's different than
Familiar
the other guys.
Do a poll. Who's a bigger star, Mookie Betts or Paul Skeens?
Who's the third face of the league or something like that? The third most popular, I guess, Mookie or Skeens? Because if you just take them head-to-head, that's hard because Mookie Betts has won two World Series.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Exactly.
No, but if you're going who's the third face of the league behind Aaron Judge and Shohei, I think it's a slightly different calculus.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Let's go to Bogish. Who's got headlines for us?
Guys, whether or not it's a big flex, Cal Raleigh hit lefty, then righty in round one of the Home Run Derby last night in Atlanta.
I thought it would be cool regardless, you know, if I win or not. And then obviously lucky enough to make it to the next round. Was grooving a little bit more lefty, so we're like, you know, since we have a chance to win, we might as well stick to the side that's working a little better.
Sticking lefty worked well enough to get Raleigh the Derby title. He's the first catcher to win it and the second Mariner joining Ken Griffey Jr. But it almost didn't happen. Raleigh, the benefactor of a StatCast measurement, breaking a first-round tie with Brett Rooker because his longest homer was roughly 8/10 of an inch longer than Rooker's. So that's one complaint. Rooker also thinks he should have had a few more swings.
I think we were shorted two balls there. I think I was I didn't get two pitches that I think I was allotted.
He blames that discrepancy, by the way, on two warm-up pitches that didn't count towards his total of 40, but left him two balls shy in the bucket for his pitcher.
Yeah. How did so much controversy happen last night?
Boring podcast.
That happened to a few guys where the pitcher ran out of balls as it was going 3-2-1 and they're scrambling to try and get balls.
No, that made sense because I was watching this and they said the graphic said two more pitches, but the guy had no more balls left. So I was like, okay, I guess this is over. I was like, how did that happen? I never figured that out until Bogey just said this. Now it makes sense.
I also can't believe that baseball would just put 40 balls into that bucket.
Yeah.
Like, throw some 50 in there. Throw 60 in there.
There are some major systematic flaws with the Home Run Derby. A kid robbing a home run, not having enough baseballs. This is ridiculous.
Also, I run out of balls in the Derby.
That's the other part. There's 16 stage managers down there, guys with headsets on. There's one for every single guy. Like, it feels like you have plenty of extra hands.
Yeah, to run into the air, have the kids in the outfield run the balls back in. I don't know what was. Can they not afford the ball?
Yeah, they only had 47, so you gotta be careful.
Also, and they're making up random measurements to make sure the bigger star gets advanced. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Hi, fans. Yeah, I know you just caught that home run from Junior Cameron. Can we get that ball back?
Then you're going to need that back.
After winning the Derby, Raleigh beat Betts cleanup, I should say, for the AL in tonight's All-Star game. First pitch from Paul Skeens somewhere after 8 Eastern. A reminder that the Perloff calendar tells us that summer's over. More proved today as LA Charger veterans report to training camp, which means we'll have one entire team in camp by the end of the day. So please remember to empty your pool and cover your patio for furniture before the first frost later this week.
It is. It's exciting and depressing.
It's not over. Only you are saying it's over. Everyone else is saying, oh, it's July 15th. Summer's in full swing.
I was on Instagram yesterday, and I was just looking through stories, and I stumbled on Adam Schefter, and he had a screenshot that said, your fantasy league has been renewed for this season. So it's also football season.
Yeah, I know. YouTube took my YouTube league.
Oh, that's killer.
Yeah, they got me that. Charge. And it's just like, it pops up. This is the thing about this day and age. We get charged for everything all the time, and it just sort of pops up. So it's like $1.99 from Apple. God knows what the hell that is. All these $1.99 charge from Google, $4.99. No clue what these are. They come in the middle of the night. It's such a scam. And then all of a sudden, boom, $500 from YouTube. I'm like, yeah, that's not the same.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, sounds like I'm sticking with Red Zone.
No, that's, well.
Cable Red Zone.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Some soccer/football news now. J.J. Watt and the entire ownership group of English club Burnley have completed their takeover of Spanish club Espanyol. The two organizations will be run separately. Victor Wembanyama telling French media that Spurs doctors say he's a full go now after battling that blood clot in his right shoulder last season. And the Portland Fire officially back. The WNBA expansion team that begins play next summer, unveiling its name and logo this morning. The first Portland Fire existed for 3 years, 2000 through 02.
That's fire.
That's back to you.
I think like a desert area team would go with fire, not a sort of Pacific Northwest. There's a lot of rain in Portland. That's all I got.
Maybe that's why they didn't exist that long the first time.
Yeah, well, I didn't know there was an earlier Portland.
You think they got it wrong?
They got it wrong.
Well, you can't be the Portland Rain or something like that when you have the Seattle Storm just, 200 miles away to the north.
Yeah, I mean, the Trailblazers, that fits the area. There's a lot of hiking paths.
Do you think they asked Gary Payton, Portland legend, for his input on this?
I was going to say the same thing.
Jeez, you make one Mount Olympus and the whole team won't ever let it die. All right.
The Portland Fire, by the way, must have been trash because I don't even remember them.
Oh, EJ, be nice.
I'm serious. I was like, wait, there was a Portland Fire? That's when I was really watching WNBA. When I was a kid, I don't even remember this team.
Yeah, man, they were playing against the Detroit Shock, remember?
I remember the Shock. I remember the
Comets.
The Cleveland Rockers, one of my favorite names and color schemes and logos. The Portland Fire just came and went.
You need a 30 for 30. Coming up, the brand new sensation hitting the nation, Pearl, but specifically Las Vegas. We'll tell you about that next. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Before we get to the newest craze hitting Las Vegas, Pearl, get some answers to our question here. What's the most overrated tourist destination? Because Buddy Hield, not sold on the Roman Colosseum once he found out that Maximus from Gladiator was not a real guy. Not sure how that's the Colosseum's fault.
Womp
but
womp.
Anyway, shout out to Buddy. Okay, got some responses for you. Kurt said the Grand Canyon. Said exactly like Clark Griswold at Vacation.
That's
you're
not
going
good
there
for your vacation.
It's Grand Canyon is underrated, overrated?
I've never been there. I don't know.
EJ, you said you've been, right?
I've never been. Oh. People who have been say that they love it. I don't know anyone.
That seems unlikely to me. Okay. Go ahead.
Las Vegas, says David.
Ah, no way.
Mount Rushmore.
Never seen it.
Never been there. Hoover Dam. Have been to the Hoover Dam.
I don't think that's that highly rated, though.
I think the McCombs Dam is way better than the Hoover Dam.
That's a local cut. I thought the Hoover Dam, listen, when you're comparing it, would I rather be drunk at the pool in Vegas or at the Hoover Dam? Well, yeah, the Hoover Dam's going to lose there every time. But on its own,
I don't think it's got that much hype. Like, the Grand Canyon's got a lot of hype. That's a number one seed. The Hoover Dam, like, doesn't have expectations. Like,
a one seed.
Like, it's like, oh, my God, let's plan our whole vacation around seeing the Hoover Dam.
How about Disney, says Chris, going to Disney World?
I don't know. I really enjoyed Disney World myself. But
I haven't been there since I was about 6 years old. Niagara Falls. That's not true. Niagara Falls is majestic.
I enjoy Niagara Falls, especially if you go to Clifton Hill right across in Niagara Falls, Ontario.
Yeah.
Lots of things to do there.
And anywhere in Florida, says Jerry.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
no way.
Disagree. Florida rocks.
That's me.
No, West Coast Florida rocks.
Pensacola?
East Coast I'm not as into.
All right.
You said not you.
Give me the South Beach, baby.
Oh, no way. You got to go to the West side is
I like the west side of Florida too.
Oh yeah.
Marco says Nashville. He said he liked it, but he got sick of it after 3 days. All they did was go to bars.
What a concept.
Quit complaining.
Well, that's kind of like Vegas. Like, how much Vegas can you do?
Fair. Speaking of Vegas, thank you for that transition. Yeah. So it's come to our attention that there's going to be a new fun game in Vegas. Now, it's not on the casino floor, Pearl, yet, but it's going to be a fun suite, and it comes with, like, its own dealers and stuff like that. It's not blackjack. It's not baccarat.
What is it?
It's Uno, Manny. Uno is coming to Las Vegas. They're putting a new suite in where you can go play Uno with a professional dealer. Now, again, you can't gamble on it like, blackjack, but that's going to be the new exciting
What do you mean
game.
You can't gamble on it like blackjack?
It's not like technically on the casino floor. I don't think it's being regulated by the gaming commission in Las Vegas. It's just a fun pop-up that they're putting like professional dealers there for your Uno game. It's kind of installation.
Oh, so they're not playing for money?
Not yet.
No, not yet.
Not yet. It's still it's still family game night for now, but it's getting souped up with a fun suite in Las Vegas.
I saw the headline, Uno's coming to Las Vegas. I assumed it was money. What are we talking about
here? We're talking about... this is the 1.0 version. And, just like how Uno now has DOS, at some point we are going to get closer to Uno being on the casino floor. But the question really is, of all the family game night games, if you could put one in Vegas that you could gamble on, which one would you want it to be?
Jenga.
Well, that's not bad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I would personally like to play Trivial Pursuit.
Oh, because you're so good at it? Oh, this is a flex how smart you are?
No, but... combined with the fact that I played the old game so much, I knew all the questions by heart. The answer is always the Chicago 7 for anything.
We'll try to be less nerdy.
Yeah, Trivial Pursuit.
How about Scrabble?
I was going to say, there's one game I feel like that's just lined up to be a Vegas entity, and that's Monopoly.
It takes so long, though.
It is blind luck, too. I mean, there's a lot of luck.
Yeah, well, that's think Vegas likes that.
I
want something that's not so lucky. They want to win.
That's something that they can win.
What I would win? Scrabble, I find impossible. When you're playing against someone who knows what they're doing in Scrabble, it is terrifying.
It's all about the two-letter words.
I'm telling you.
You got to know the two-letter
words. The word cat gets you a lot of points in Scrabble.
Are you playing in English or Spanish?
Mm-hmm.
Gato or cat? Meanwhile.
I'm also playing with a four-year-old.
Well, smart. I like Jenga. That could be a good idea.
Yeah, that's a spectacular idea. I have a couple of brewskis, knock over some blocks.
I don't see how the house is always going to win.
That's a lot of stress.
Ooh,
with actual money on Jenga. Jenga's stressful without any money involved. I mean, I get really tense.
Who doesn't love stress?
Well, it's not exactly how we like to vacation.
We're a big, there are a couple games we play, Scattergories. I don't know how you would gamble on that because it's always, I don't know if you've ever played that, but you have to think of a word that starts with a certain letter, like kangaroo for K. And there's every time there's an argument about whether you cheated or not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's the thing with any of these games. Like, they're the rule. Even Uno. Has anyone ever not cheated at Uno? I cheat all the time. You don't hide cards in Uno?
I had friends over about a couple months ago, and there was fights over what the actual Uno rules are.
Yeah, sure.
The whole idea of can you stack colors and numbers.
They say no.
What about, you're not supposed to, and yet someone came to my crib and was like, oh, no, you definitely can do this, and it was a whole big fight.
What about when I chewed out my six-year-old daughter for not calling Uno when she had one card left? That was an ugly scene. Yeah, Uno is controversial.
I was just going to ask you, do you let your kids win at stuff?
Yes, sometimes it's harder work to let them win.
About Chutes and Ladders?
I mean, Chutes and Ladders, Candyland. What about Twister?
Sorry. Play Sorry?
Yeah, Sorry's good.
Twister at the casino?
Twister at 3 a.m. at a casino is going to be wild.
It could be lawsuits.
Definitely lawsuits.
Or it could go, it could be a late night club, if you know what I'm saying.
How'd you meet?
Olympic Gardens Twister?
Raucous game of Twister. Thank you, EJ Stewart.
And then we eloped.
Nanny Rodriguez. We walked down the street to the Little White Chapel.
Elvis' wedding.
Perloff and I went to one. EJ was there, too. It was a good time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Whatever happened to those couple? That couple. Thank you, Andrew Bogus, Andrew Kaplan. We those coffee drinkers. Brett McMurphy, who joined us. See you tomorrow.